Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Like, I think he was the team MVP and maybe the league MVP, and the season is literally on the line, and he's not asking you to do what you don't do. It would just be a normal Zach Britton situation, and he never goes to you, and then he goes to your fifth starter instead of you.
Does this hang over the team until they go to the playoffs? They have to conceivably go back to the playoffs before this goes away, dissipates.
I mean, maybe I'm listening to my buddy Peanut and Arbutus, but I think they are going back, man. I think we're going to be talking in 6 months about a parade in Baltimore, Horn.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
That, of course, was the great Jason Lockenfora from yesterday, who had a good evening. Because his O's won with a walk-off home run.
That's
and
right.
Britton got in the game in the ninth and tenth. Without the lead. So Buck Showalter learned something. I'm Tony Kornheiser. We're here with Tori Clark and David Aldridge and Michael Kornheiser. Nigel will run the board. We are loaded. We have Michael Wilbon. We have Hank Azaria, whose show Brockmire debuts tomorrow night. We have Steve Sands. We are at an undisclosed location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We are plausibly live, and this first segment is going to go a while. So as Terrell Owens would say, get your popcorn and sit down. There are three stories of consequence for us. The national championship is settled last night. Georgetown, accused of bungling all week long, made a very dramatic hire yesterday in Patrick Ewing, and the Nats win. Okay, so we'll just take them in that order. We're going to start with UNC beating Gonzaga, which pretty much saves the ACC. David, I'll start with you. There are terrible shooting percentages on both sides.
Yep.
Under 34% for North Carolina, under 32%, I think, for Gonzaga. I would say that means it's bad offense, but I would also say that Gonzaga held West Virginia to 26%.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Gonzaga's defense is pretty good. In the end, North Carolina is bigger and stronger, which is a little bit odd to me because I thought Gonzaga was big and strong.
Well, they were until their guy fouled out in 14 minutes.
And that kid's going to be good.
So that speaks to the officiating, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Which is bad. It's bad, tournament.
It was just not a good game, Tony. I mean,
you can try
to sugarcoat it as much as you want, but it was the teams didn't shoot well. I think Carolina was 4 for 26 on threes. I mean, it was just awful shooting.
Only Berry made threes. I think nobody else made threes.
I mean, Jackson was 0-for, and he's the best shooter on their team. Karnowski, who was had a really good tournament, was awful last night.
One for nine.
He was awful.
Couldn't play.
And the game was officiated way too tight, I thought, and didn't let the kids play. So it just wasn't a well played game, and you give Carolina credit for kind of hanging in there and figuring out, making some plays at the end. But I wouldn't say they played great and won the game. They just won two or three possessions that they needed to win.
If I'm not mistaken, there were at least three games, Tori, that Carolina did that in the tournament. I think at Arkansas, they had a really big lead. They squandered the lead. They had to win at the end.
Right.
Against Oregon, they had to win at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have to win at the end against Kentucky? I guess they did have to win at the end.
Yeah, no, that's when May hit the shot.
May hit that shot. And last night, they are said to have the most talent in the league, in the country, but they win in a way that you're breathing hard when you watch them.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, speaking of breathing hard, so I watched the whole game. I might have taken a nap once or twice. I was just writing down my notes as I'm watching. I left my cards at home today. But I just kept writing down, this is hard to watch. Miss, free throw, miss.
Right.
And then tired, their faces. Yeah. At the start of the second half, you expected somebody to just come out flying, and they just looked exhausted, right? They'd be down on one knee.
The game was winnable by any team that got hot.
Sure.
The game was very, very winnable.
The other thing I had was refs, bad refs.
Yeah.
Bad refs.
I don't know what you're supposed to do with this. There's a merit system in almost all sports that gets you into the most prestigious of all of the finals.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean the crews have worked together.
No, they haven't. It's an all-star.
And so that's...
It could be. Yeah, I mean, it could be a problem. But it's always been that way.
And also, it's just foul after foul after foul after foul.
Yeah, look, I get it. I know that they were both big. They have big guys, and they throw their bodies around, and they both are very physical. And so you could call a tight game. I'm not saying the calls were wrong. I'm just saying the effect of all those calls really destroyed any rhythm this game could have and made it very difficult for either team to kind of get going in any type of way.
Nigel is the winner, right? You and Barry win, split the prize.
Yes, I know.
You get Kenyan women's lacrosse gear, which
I'm
is
so
great.
Awesome. By the way, do you want to read the note?
I do. Read this. This is, Nigel, you do not get a Kenyan note because you went to Denison, but you do get an awesome Kenyan T-shirt. Wear it with Lord and Lady Pride. If you return to Denison for alumni event or an honorary doctorate, let me know. I'd love to buy you a beer at Brews. I'm no Gretchen Wu, but I'll pick up the tab.
Nice.
Very kind.
And this is Meredith Buzzy, who
very
is the
kind
head coach.
Yes.
I'm wearing the gear today, so maybe
it looks very
good. Look. It looks good against the wall.
I feel like this is now official, now that you're wearing the gear.
Oh, I feel good about that.
It is. The official women's lacrosse program?
Yes, because they sent us a big box.
Official private school.
And you can take some home, too.
Although we thank Drexel and the chocolates that they sent us.
We are thrilled with
Drexel. It was a close second. And I would just like to say, listen, I'm thrilled to win again. And I'm thrilled to share that honor with Barry.
Phil's mom
but
almost
I'm
won.
Devastated because Phil's mom was this close to winning the whole thing.
She's still a winner.
She is a winner.
She's a winner.
Yes.
And I'm a winner because I beat most of these guys.
Yes, you did.
I finished like right near the bottom,
yes.
But I didn't finish
pretty
at
sure,
the bottom.
Pretty sure I was at the bottom.
Chuck Todd.
Oh, Chuck Todd took
Chuck
the dirt.
Chuck Todd is DFL.
Chuck Todd keeping me safe for another year.
Chuck Todd.
You know
DFL.
You guys have talked about in some leagues, is it the European Basketball League where if you're at the bottom 10%, you're gone?
Yeah.
I think some people should be relegated.
I might be relegated.
I'd be happy to. Then I don't have to set it up for you.
So here's something interesting. And the whole theme from North Carolina all year was redemption in the sense that they, you know.
I thought it was the ceiling is the roof.
Well, that's Jordan. That's Jordan.
The ceiling is the
but
roof.
The thing is, they got beat last year. I don't think they played great last year. I don't think you have to be
game.
Redeemed.
Yeah.
I mean, you got beat by the most famous shot in college basketball in this particular game. But they, by Villanova, they come back and they win. It's really tough to go back-to-back to get back to the finals. Butler did it, of all places, but you don't expect it to happen. Roy Williams now has three.
Three. Yes, he does.
That's one more than Dean.
That's right.
That's even with Knight and Calhoun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like Roy Williams a lot. I didn't put him in that category.
No.
Now I have to. I should.
Yeah.
One shy of Rupp, two shy of Krzyzewski.
Right.
He's an all-timer now.
Sure. He's with the immortals, as they say.
Yeah.
Great jackets, too.
He does wear great jackets.
Yeah, he
does. He's very, very well-dressed. Not like Jay Wright. Jay Wright is more conservatively well-dressed.
Jay Wright's just better dressed.
Yeah, he's better. But I think Roy looks good. That stuff is Alexander Julian stuff, at least it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The famous designer, and I don't know if he's still famous. I don't even know if he's still designing. Well,
yeah, he did the Hornets jerseys. The first iteration of the Hornets.
And he's a North Carolina guy. Yeah. So that's.
And I do like the fact that he'll throw out a dadgummit every now and then.
He does that all the time.
Yeah,
I don't know that in
the words
are
so
that.
Perfectly chosen, though.
Yeah.
I don't belong
as
in the
Brit,
same
I think that's choreographed.
As a Brit, we don't get that word a lot.
I think that's choreographed.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so we're going to move from one college coach to another. The big news where we are sitting right now in Chevy Chase, Maryland, the big news locally, well, maybe it's the Nats winning, but that's one of 162.
Exactly.
I think it's hiring Patrick Ewing, the most important and best player Georgetown has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
He has no formal experience in college coaching or college basketball since the day he left to become a member of the New York Knicks. He has publicly stated a number of times, I want to be a head coach in the NBA, and he has worked at the NBA. He's worked at the NBA. So the thing that comes up for me is very, very simple. Two things. One, can he handle the coaching and handle the recruiting? Because this ain't the pros. Mm-hmm. You get Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, you're likely to have them for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In college, you got to replenish, and if you're going after good players, you got to replenish every other year. I mean, not everybody's leaving after one, but everybody's leaving after two. North Carolina, the exception to the rule, they had seniors. They had a bunch of seniors on that team.
Yes.
So that's the exception to the rule. Can he coach and can he recruit? And I think the larger question in this area is, what does this mean for Big John? Did Big John have a call in this, or as I think might be more likely, and I certainly could be wrong, and I'm going to yield the floor in a second, was this Georgetown saying, please don't leave us. Please stay with us. What can we do to keep you? Start with David.
Well, look, I come at this as somebody who covers the NBA, so I know Patrick from the NBA, you know, and his days as a player and then morphing into his days as a coach. I'm a little amused by what I hear, like people saying that it's the college game is completely different from the pro game. Yes, it's about 8 minutes shorter. Yes, it is. But, you know, it's not brain surgery. It's basketball. You have to teach kids how to play basketball the way you want them to play basketball. So Patrick Ewing, from this standpoint, is completely different than Chris Mullin, who had no coaching experience when
Zero.
He went to St. John's.
Zero.
Had never been on an NBA bench, much less a college
bench. I think
bench.
The same with Clyde Drexler
and
when
Clyde
he went
Drexler
back to Houston.
Clyde Drexler retired and took the Houston job.
And
had never been.
Didn't work.
That's totally different. Patrick Ewing has been a coach in the NBA since 2002. Okay, he retired in 2002. That fall, he was on the Wizards bench with Doug Collins. So he's been on the bench for 15 years. I mean, how much apprenticeship does a guy have to get before he gets an opportunity?
Do you think he was not going to be a head coach in the NBA after that period of time?
I don't know. You know, he had interviewed with Sacramento last year. He'd gotten a few interviews. There is a bias against big men. I cannot explain it. I have no I don't know why it is, but it is.
Get out.
No. How many?
Because of his weight?
No. Big guys, centers, tall guys.
Got it.
Almost every coach in the NBA is a former guard. It's across the board.
It's like
historically.
See the floor like catchers in baseball.
Maybe. Maybe.
I thought Ty Lue was a center.
You know what? I wondered about Lambeer, who did that apprenticeship in the
example.
WNBA and
exactly.
won.
Exactly.
And
so never got
well.
A sniff.
Maybe people didn't like him.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean,
Kareem, people didn't like him.
Now, Kareem is a different deal.
Yeah.
Kareem didn't ever reach out. Kevin McHale is one. But there's very few. If you go back and look.
Is that right?
There's very few big guys that get NBA head coaching jobs. Maybe they think. Now, what happens is, and I know this is true, big guys get pigeonholed. Well, you can only coach other big guys. That's all you know about basketball. And Patrick Ewing made a point from the minute he took the job as an assistant coach of saying, I am not going to be a big man coach. I want to be a coach, period. I want to coach everybody. And learned not only from Doug Collins, but from Stan Van Gundy, from Jeff Van Gundy, and now from Steve Clifford, who's an excellent coach in Charlotte. He has learned from some of the best coaches. He's been with some of the best systems. He knows all the things you need to know from an X and O standpoint about the game of basketball. So please, don't tell me he can't X and O.
Are you surprised at the hire?
I am. I am surprised at the hire. The question is, can he recruit? That's the only question. That's the question for every college basketball coach, Division I to Division III. Can you recruit? That's it. There's nothing else. If you can recruit, you're going to win. If you can't recruit, you're not going to win. That's what we don't know.
Tori?
Okay, this is the first I've heard that's given me some thoughts that this actually was a good decision. Because when I hear or see Patrick Ewing, I see John Thompson. And to me, it looked like they're just not making a big enough break with the past. If an organization's been struggling for some years, whether it's a company or a team, I think you make a big change. Mm-hmm. This does not seem
change. This is not a break.
At all. And then you talk about recruiting all the time, but doesn't he have to put together a whole staff? Things like compliance are really, really important at the college level, right? It's not just the recruiting, although that obviously is the most important thing.
This is what I would wonder about with Patrick Ewing. The kids he's going to recruit never saw him play.
Yes, you're right.
They never saw him play. So is that an advantage or disadvantage?
Parents did.
The
uncles did. The grandparents did.
So you think
the coaches, the AU coaches too.
So you think he can walk in to a living room?
He will get in living rooms. Now, can he close? I don't know.
Yes.
I think he can, but I don't know. You don't know. You do not know until a guy is in that room and has to close the sale. And some guys are great at it and some guys aren't, and that's what's the difference. And so we will find out if he can recruit, but he's got to be able to recruit.
What do we think at this table? What do we think about Big John?
Mm-hmm.
What is his – do we think he – engineered this? Do we think he had no idea?
No.
Is he going to be involved?
I don't know if I'm sure he'll be involved, obviously. I mean, Patrick's going to talk to John. Come on. He's going to talk to John. He's a father figure to Patrick. He's going to talk to John. But remember, they offered Mike Bray the job, okay? And he turned him down.
Yes, and Shaka Smart.
And Shaka. So those are breaks. Patrick was not their first choice. If this was the first guy they brought in, you could say, well, this is just, they're not doing anything. They made the choice. They tried to break. They couldn't get anybody. So now you're talking about second, third tier college coaches that you don't want, or the greatest player in the history of the program. I think that's a pretty easy call.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
I,
And they wouldn't have done it without, to your answer your question, they wouldn't have done it if John Thompson wasn't okay with it.
I agree with that. I think it's a reaching out to John because they fired his son. And you can talk about this, you can write all you want about that was improbable. That wasn't improbable. That was impossible. Mm-hmm. That was impossible. What happened? This is improbable.
Yeah.
That is impossible. But yet we saw that happen. I think they want.
Tori has her hand.
Tori has her hand.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Does John Thompson still raise money for the school?
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
I'm sure he does.
John Thompson is the school.
Yeah.
John
building's named after him.
Patrick Ewing's not Georgetown. No. He's second. Yeah. John Thompson. So we'll see. You can't make any judgment immediately. I would say this, though. People were talking yesterday about the happy coincidence that Patrick Ewing happened to be in Washington because the Wizards were going to play Charlotte, uh-huh. and Patrick is here, and he walked over there and he talked to them. This deal's been done for a while.
No. Right.
This deal's been done. The only thing that had to happen yesterday is Patrick Ewing had to say, I want it, and don't throw up on his own shoes.
Yeah.
That's right. Right. That's all.
I heard very late that Georgetown was down
this
to
wasn't
two.
A whim.
No, it was not. But I heard it was down to two candidates. It was Pat Ewing and actually Pat Collins. They just love the name Pat.
And the snow stick.
Yeah, but then Pat held out for more money. So.
I think that on the Georgetown, well, not so much on the Georgetown campus, but I think that the people who have watched Georgetown for a long period of time are basically saying this. I don't know, but I hope so.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know, but I hope so.
I would say this. I don't think whether they hire Bray or Shaka Smart, anybody who thinks they're going back to the 80s is insane. That's not going to happen. Georgetown's not going to be that school anymore.
Why?
Because the Big East isn't the Big East anymore.
Sure.
That's what made Georgetown.
Notre Dame's a better place than Georgetown
absolutely.
For basketball.
Absolutely. And look, Big John said this to me 25 years ago, and I've told you this. If you're going to have a job, get one of them University of jobs.
Yeah.
So why is Shaka Smart going to leave the University of Texas that has its own television network?
Only because he's afraid he's going to get fired because it
maybe,
didn't work.
Maybe.
Right. Yeah. That's the
Nigel,
thing.
Are you happy as the biggest Georgetown fan here?
Well, I love Patrick Ewing. I mean, he was a great player for the program. But exactly like Mr. Tony said, you're like, I hope it works out.
When the job came open, a bunch of us were sitting around at the PTI show, and there's some Georgetown ties there. Mm-hmm. And the initial reaction was, oh, God, don't give it to Patrick Ewing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that has softened in time over a week or 2 weeks as you see other people say no to it, and you begin to wrap your arms around the notion that he's served a very long apprenticeship, and, you know, why not? I mean, that's the other thing you get to. Not so much why as why not.
Sure.
You say, yeah, why not? Give him a shot.
Sure.
Give him a shot. And we'll see. And
we hope the best for him.
Yes.
We wish him the best.
It would be great for the program to be, you know,
maybe he'll fill out that student section.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is the big problem. You become a ghost program because nobody goes to see you.
Yes.
You're playing in an 18,000-seat arena, and you can't get 6,000 people there. So Patrick Ewing, there'll at least be some excitement. I don't know what it translates into. And again, relative to what Thompson was saying, it's not the University of Maryland.
No.
There are not that many grads. They're not that many. That's why AU hasn't built an 18,000-seat arena. That's why Bender has, what does it seat? 4,500.
Something like that, yeah.
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 Because that's what we call smart.
Yeah. That's what we got.
Okay. More in the
more.
Open.
There's more.
The Nats.
Still the open.
Michael, you went to the Nats game.
I did go to the Nats game. The day overperformed. The sun came out for the first pitch, and it was actually quite warm for the first three or four innings until Strasburg started giving up those hits.
Those balls were hit hard in the fourth.
Everything was hit hard. Fourth, fifth, all until he was taken out.
Did it get a little too warm for him, perhaps?
Maybe he was beginning to wilt a little bit. Yeah. It was actually getting a little warm for me.
What happened with the concession stands? You told us before the game.
I don't want to go. Everyone's been piling on for the concessions. The stadium staff and the overall infrastructure needs a practice day. They did not get that on Friday.
That's right. They didn't have the exhibition.
If you look on Twitter yesterday
the
afternoon,
flush.
The good news is the Nationals have built up their Wi-Fi network. So if you are in the stadium, you can critique the stadium experience
in real time.
Ad nauseum. So, the concession stands, every year they change, you know, they move one kiosk over, they get rid of a burger stand and they put in, it seems that they get rid of more food options and they put more drinks. If you're looking to get
sounds
loaded
smart to me.
At 2 p.m. on a Monday afternoon, you know, you don't have to look too far. But these new The new point of sale systems, now that you're in the restaurant business, you should know about POS.
I know.
You're sitting there stalled.
Point of sale, not
so
what
they
you
had think. To go. Yeah, they had to go POS, to cash. Yeah. They had to go to cash only. They had to go to cash only, and then the
cash only. No, nobody your age carries cash.
Exactly. I actually always
carry cash.
You always carry cash to a ball
game.
That's
your move.
And then the ATMs, I think, were running out of money, or at least out of order.
So
ooh, that's bad.
Wow.
So people normally. You try and plan it this way. You take a half inning and say, all right, this is where, you know, this part of the lineup, I'm okay leaving to see Strasburg pitch or to come up at bat, and then I'm willing to maybe, if he gets on, like watch Trey Turner from the concourse. You're willing to give up a half inning. The people sitting next to me were gone for 2+ innings to get one beverage.
Wow.
Luke?
This was not Luke.
Okay.
This was to the other side.
Okay.
Luke has the fancy season ticket holder that gets you past the lines.
Ooh, that's good
pass
to be Luke.
Pass. Yeah,
and it's good to be a friend of Luke.
Yes, it is.
All right, in terms of the game.
That wasn't the game?
Everything you could hope for if you're a Nats fan happened.
Sure.
Harper, you're down 2-0, and you're thinking the worst. You're thinking, oh, my God, Strasburg, he's going to grab his arm at some point. It's a disaster. Then they're down 2-0. Then Harper hits one out. Fifth opening day homer. He's like 23 years old. He's got more opening day homers than anyone in baseball.
He certainly swings hard enough on opening day.
I'm
glad he got it at that at bat because he was going to keep trying.
Yeah. And then Adam Lind in his first at bat
swing
ever as a Nat with that terrible, crazy Billy Goat beard of his. Just awful. Hits one out. It's the game winner. It's the 2-run home run. Drew and Heisey both did that last year.
Yeah.
The Nats do very well in pinch hit home runs.
Their bench has been excellent.
And then Treinen, and you hold your breath. You know,
got that great
Treinen. What did he pitched? 17 pitches, 2 strikeouts. Yeah. The great sinker.
Yeah, got Stanton to pop up.
What more could you ask for?
It would have been nice to have been there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I couldn't be there. My husband and friends used the tickets, wonderfully organized by David Aldridge. God bless him.
Wait. Your husband went to opening game, but now he's going to the Masters without you?
I'll tell you what, not to be talked about on air, but I have escalated this to levels my husband never contemplated. It's
awesome.
Going to take years for him to
suffer. SeatGeek sells President's Club seats.
Wow. So, but if you're a season ticket holder or a fan, it just couldn't work out.
That was great.
It's great.
Perfect.
What month is this, Tom?
This is April.
Okay.
It's still early.
But as you said.
But the Nats can go 162-0.
And other teams can.
Cubs can. And the Cubs can. So there's, it's just, but I mean, all of the things, what are your points of concern? Strasburg's health is a point of concern.
Always, sure.
Treinen closing is a point of concern.
Sure.
Bounce back by Harper is a point of concern.
Yeah. Yeah.
So three of those came under scrutiny.
Got them all.
And each one gets checked off.
He got on base a bunch and looked great.
Trey Turner and Adam Eaton in the 1-2 combo, you saw them causing a lot of fear in the other team with the walks they were getting and just the way they had to pitch around them. And on the base, you saw a double steal that looked like just an orchestrated ballet dance with just the way they can even take off when they're stealing.
So it makes you feel good.
Yeah, and some smaller points, you looked at Trey Turner playing short, looked really good. He had a couple nice plays. The way he throws gives you some concern because it's more of that sidearm versus what we had gotten used to
with Espinoza.
The one positive of Espinoza was his cannon arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do love you guys, particularly in baseball. There are the happy optimist in all of you and your willingness to draw big conclusions from one game.
I love that.
It's adorable.
Well,
it's absolutely adorable.
It's better to win than lose.
It is, but you won. It's great. Wonderful. Great day. But you are hoping for and drawing some big conclusions from one game. It's spectacular.
Because they haven't played the Cubs yet and Madden hasn't walked Harper 15 times.
Yeah, to destroy Harper's
mind. This is my greatest sports week of the year, and opening day just serves as a way to just delay my excitement for the Masters for the rest of this week.
Here you go. But I've listened to you guys talk about other sports, and you will not make the same long-term conclusions, predictions about players or teams the way you do about baseball.
No, but also in baseball, you have to accept the fact that you can have a great year and still lose 62 times.
Yes.
And that's a great year.
It's a great year.
100 wins is a great year, and so there's a lot of losing to it. Yes. We will take a break when we come back. Michael Wilbon will join us from his palatial home in Scottsdale. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Zydeco, Stephen Randall of New Orleans, the singer and the drummer for the Big Easy Playboys. This is his brand new song, Le Bon Temps, or Le Bon Ton, as they might say in Creole in New Orleans, for French for good times. French Quarter Festival at New Orleans this coming Thursday. The Big Easy Playboys perform on the Zydeco stage from 12:30 to 1:45, and shouts of lachiserie are welcome, but please refrain from brandishing the TK salute, as this is a family event. So, Stephen Randall,
I'm going to try and go to that.
That would be great if you did. Michael Wilbon joins us now with Precious Little Sleep. There are a million things to talk about, so we're not going to dwell on any one in particular. But you did go to the game last night. It was, the shooting percentages were terrible on both sides, which leads me to believe, because I've seen Gonzaga a lot lately, nobody shoots well against them. They must play good defense. What did you think of the game, and is it a satisfying conclusion to you?
Well, it's a fair conclusion, kind of a logical conclusion. Tony was just so poorly played, poorly officiated. Mm-hmm. At least the people who were playing the game were kids. The people who officiated the game ought to be embarrassed. They would just donate their salaries to something else because they were so awful. And it was poorly played. Not just the shooting percentages, the turnovers. It was like they were tired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was as if both teams were just like, we've run out of, they wanted to. You know, the effort was there. And, you know, you come down to a point where Nigel Williams-Goss has a shot to probably put, in the last, 48 seconds or something like that, has a shot to put Gonzaga up one and couldn't hit it. And you go, that's it right there. You know Carolina's going to come down and score, and they did. And the game played out the way I thought in terms of the back and forth of it. It was just so not well played. And so it's in that way, you know, you're hoping for, look, you're not going to get a game like last year every year.
No.
You're not going to get that.
No, you're not.
But so it's like, okay, all right, I'm ready for something else now.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I understand that.
The tournament delivered. It delivered. But it's like, I'm ready for the big boys now. I'm ready for the guys who get paid. Let me start watching that again this week. But I'm glad we had that final. And I was, to be honest with you, I don't root against North Carolina. Almost never. I just don't. I have too much respect for what was built before now by Dean Smith and other people, by Dean Smith. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of rooting for Gonzaga because my school lost to Gonzaga. You know, it'd be cool if my school, Northwestern, if we could walk around sort of saying, hey,
that's right,
we lost to the national champ, baby, in a contested game at that. So that didn't happen, but I'm glad to see North Carolina and Roy Williams and all the people that I know and like David would say. When you cover basketball for a long, long time, you know people who, they might not be big stars, but North Carolina, you know so many people affiliated with the university, so good for them.
This is what I would say. I mean, I thought North Carolina would win. There's a certain amount of redemption, not just for them, but for the ACC, which had such a terrible run at the beginning of the tournament. North Carolina is a good program. It's been a good program forever and ever and ever, and the coaches they've had, from Frank McGuire to Dean Smith to Roy Williams, they've run the program well. They recruit well. I know people at Duke hate North Carolina and vice versa, but to me, if I went to Duke, I'd be happy North Carolina. I beat them twice this year, and I'd be happy that they won.
And they don't. They're not.
They're, no, I know. I know. I know. They hate
that. With one
I know.
Last night in the Big Dome. No, they're not.
No, I get that part. It was, I think if you look back on most of the NCAA final games, while many have been exciting, you will find that most of them are not particularly well played relative to, for example, the final eight games to get there. You know, it's it's the way it's been for a very long period
of
time. But Gonzaga, and to your point about Northwestern, Gonzaga now officially, not like Boise State, you know, Gonzaga now officially, they're a power.
Yeah.
Three of the last five, they've been in the tournament 20 straight years.
They have been for a long time.
And they're a power.
They are. They've been, you know, when you get to the, when you justify the seeding, you know, when you're a number one seed, you get to the final four, you get to the final game, and you've got a shot in the final 45 seconds to win it.
That's right.
Against North Carolina.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, you if you're in it to win it against North Carolina, UCLA, Kentucky, Indiana, Duke, you know, you then you're a big boy. So I don't want to hear people say anything about that.
All right, here's a curveball, because you're just waking up, and you may not know this. There's a report by Adam Schefter, Tony Romo to TV. Not going to play anymore. To TV. I am, if this is true, I'm really surprised by this. I'm really surprised. I thought he'd want one more shot. What do you think?
Well, Tony, if it's health, Tony Romo has met with, how many doctors you think Tony Romo's met with over the past two and a half, three years?
27 collarbone surgeons.
Yeah, so Tony Romo is privy to information about his own situation that we aren't. And maybe not even the Dallas Cowboys are, although the Dallas Cowboys would have been made aware of that information by Tony Romo at some point. And maybe this whole thing has been the delay, the foot dragging that we thought was just Jerry Jones. Maybe, and we'll, you know, this stuff tends to come out. We'll find out that perhaps Tony Romo was saying, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, well.
And maybe he was saying that to other teams. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm 30, what is he, 35, 36?
Probably about 36.
And you know, look, this is Tony. We talk all the time about player safety. Nothing makes football safe. Nothing. People try to make it more humane. That's all. You can't make it safe. It's not golf. And so, if you've got the injuries Tony Romo has had over a period of years, and your doctors are telling you whatever they're telling you, then if Tony Romo goes to TV,
he'll be great.
Great for him. You welcome him with open arms, and it's good. We'll be seeing a lot more of him.
I am, as I say, totally stunned by it. I just didn't expect this. And if I own the Houston Texans and I coach the Houston Texans, I'm looking. I got my hands in the air. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to, I think they real David. Don't you think they really expected
that
him?
It's the move, right?
Yeah, That they were Denver, and I think more likely in state. So I'm surprised. I am surprised. We'll see how that plays out. All right, let's get to
quarterback care they could trade for if they really want one.
That's right. Let's get to Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing.
What are your reservations? What are your enthusiasms? What do you make of all of it?
Well, I mean, my enthusiasm is entirely tied up in knowing Patrick Ewing. Somebody sent me the clip last night, the photo of the front page of the Washington Post in, I think, February of 1981. That is now 36 years ago with my byline on it. From Satch Sanders' restaurant in Boston.
Not Chad's.
Right. Announcing Patrick Ewing, I mean, covering the byline on the story in the Washington Post of Patrick Ewing's announcement that he was going to Georgetown. And I can remember being there. It was the first big thing I ever covered. I was 22 years old. And I have known Patrick Ewing then all of my adult life and all of his adult life plus. For these last 14, 15 years. He has worked as an assistant coach in some capacity or another since the Washington Wizards when Michael Jordan came and was running the team for a minute. And then the road has taken him where it's taken him, to Orlando and here and there and hither and yon and Houston. And I know how much he wants to coach. And I know how he has prepared himself by working as an assistant to coach. And anybody who listens to Jeff Van Gundy on television knows this because Jeff often talks about it. Mm-hmm. And Jeff talks about owing Patrick Ewing. Owing as the coach of the Knickerbockers to Patrick Ewing. You know, and it's anybody who knows him, and David knows this because he's had, I'm sure, more conversations with Patrick about this than I have, and I've had many. He wants to coach. And the phone has not been ringing with head coaching offers in the NBA. And while I was told this weekend here in Arizona that this was not his first interest and wasn't something he was interested in at all initially, I think there are people close to him who say, I know there are. Patrick, listen, we know this isn't what you dreamt of, but this is still a chance to be a head coach. Not only that, when alma mater calls, and I don't think he had, I don't think he had to have his arm twisted. I think he had to sort of be led to look at it in a little different way than he might have been looking at it 6 months ago, or even the day the JT3 was fired. And so, Tony, my enthusiasm is entirely in that this guy is such a worthy person. He spent his life toiling in basketball. I'm glad he's getting a shot. Am I going to sit here and guarantee you that, oh, Georgetown is now going to be in the Final Four in 3 years? No. I'm not going to do that. What does he know or what does he not know? And he can. I'm sure that already he was in contact with all kinds of people who were talking about staff. And I don't mean just an assistant coaching staff. I mean a compliance person. I mean, there are all kinds of things that Georgetown is going to have to be supportive about. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they bungled it, if they sort of stumbled into this, if they had this in the back of their minds all along. I don't know that yet. My enthusiasm is entirely tied up in, I know this guy, I like him. I was the first person that he ever was interviewed by, because Big John made it that way on a flight from Rochester, New York, on New Year's Eve, which was really 1981. I guess we weren't even 82 yet. And so that affects me to have known him that long, and I really you know how I feel about Patrick.
I do.
And so I can't see this any other way than I was surprised to hear it coming to this. I'm glad it has come to this.
There are, and obviously we open the show with this, and we get to you later in the show. There are a million things you can say about this. Half of them are good, and half of them are bad, and you just. You really, really don't know. I always fall back on Mullen and Drexler and, you know, the head coaching for the first time in something that he hasn't done in 35 years. I mean, he's been in the pros. He's been in the pros. But if you asked me if I had anything to do with Georgetown and you asked me what's the biggest name, you know, that we could get, it's not even close. There's nobody else that you would think of.
Two people who are Georgetown basketball and no millennials. One of them is not Allen Iverson.
No, it's not. No, it's
okay?
not.
Okay?
No.
So, you know, Google whatever you need to Google. Go to Wikipedia. Do whatever you got to do. Go ask your uncle or your barber or whoever you got. They are John Thompson and Patrick Ewing.
That's it.
That's it.
That's the list. Yeah, that's it.
And so, and Georgetown University does owe Patrick Ewing. It owes him. The university does. Because without Patrick Ewing, they're not the cultural icon in college sports that they became.
Well, they lost that about 8 to 10 years ago.
Tony, there's no question about that. But for, you know, from 1981, when he got there, you know, up until when they were in the Final Four in 2007, mm-hmm. You know, so that's not a bad run right there. That's almost 30 years. And I worry that Georgetown, covering Georgetown basketball, having had a front row seat to the development of all this, again, with Big John and Patrick, that's probably the athletic highlight of my career in terms of covering something. All these other things I moved in and out of, and they were great. Maryland winning, and the Redskins winning, and all that's all great to have seen. Georgetown and Patrick Ewing, that and Big John, for me personally, that meant something. And so, I fear in some ways that they could become DePaul in about a minute and a half.
We'll see.
The similarities are so obvious. Yes. It's easy to sort of build that case. I hope that's not the case. I hope Patrick Ewing now has great success at his alma mater.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Thank you, Michael.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back. Well, we supposedly do news, but we're not really doing news. We're talking to Steve Sands of the Golf Channel when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
K Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house. It has a sleek design, and it is delivered in a small, how-did-they-do-that sized box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. The mattress industry has forced consumers into paying notoriously high markups. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns with a 100-night home trial. If you don't love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It combines supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the Internet's favorite mattress. There's free shipping and returns in the United States and Canada. And if you try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home, and then you don't love it, they will pick it up and refund you everything. It is designed, developed, and assembled in the United States of America, and you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/Tony. And Casper is spelled C-A-S-P-E-R. Use the promo code Tony. Let's do it again. www.casper.com/Tony. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Corey Davies of Indianapolis, Indiana, who writes, I send this song in from my never-released album, Midwest Problems, in support of your Generation X listeners. Between the rants about millennials and people over 60, we seem to be the middle child. I live in the Fountain Square District, moonlighting as a hipster, where my random calls of La Cheeserie are met with little or no response, hence the nickname Naptown. I hope to visit D.C. someday, maybe talk you into a giant game of disc golf, which is comparable to throwing toys for your giant dog to fetch. I don't know disc golf, but it gives us a reason to get to Steve Sands of the Golf Channel, who is in Augusta with a million things to talk about, not just golf. But we're going to start with golf and just the notion of as you look at the field here, Dustin Johnson comes in sort of like Tiger Woods used to come in. He comes in really, really hot. Is he the clear-cut favorite, or is there something about that course that works against him, Steve?
That's a tough one. I mean, the last time somebody came in here and won the green jacket as the number one player in the world, Tony, was Tiger Woods 15 years ago, 2002. Mm-hmm. So the prohibitive favorite has not won here in 15 years.
Wow.
And Dustin has a nice track record here, Tony, but not a great one. He's finished fourth and sixth before, but not really a contending fourth and sixth. So I don't think he's a heavy favorite. I think he is the betting favorite, but I don't think he's a heavy favorite.
I had no idea that that was true, that they hadn't won in that long.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a long time.
Who else is getting talked up?
I think Rory's getting talked up a lot. Rory showed a lot of promise a few weeks ago at Bay Hill. He got eliminated in Austin at the match play because of a very odd rule when somebody withdrew and somebody advanced because of that. You know, Rory's looking for the career Grand Slam again this week. No one's ever won the career Grand Slam here at Augusta in the modern era of the career Grand Slam. And I think that the only thing that's going to hurt Rory is, and we've talked about this before, he's from Northern Ireland. He's played a lot of golf when he was a kid in crazy, windy, tough conditions. It's going to be really cold and windy here on Thursday. Supposed to get a little warmer on Friday, but still going to be some wind. So when the tee times come out today, it'll be interesting to see where Rory is placed, because if it's windy, for whatever reason, Rory doesn't play great in windy conditions. So I think that might hurt him. I think a lot of people think Jordan's going to play well. I think Ricky comes in here in good form. If you want to go off the board, I would tell you go Mark Leishman, a Ryan Moore, a Tommy Fleetwood kind of guy. But the four best players in the world, and Jason Day as well, the five best players in the world, I think, are coming in here in pretty good form.
Just as a side note, Jason Day's sort of mental status, I mean, all the stuff with his mom that you don't have to talk about, but he voluntarily talked about, that becomes part of the story now. Is he right to play golf?
You know, it's interesting you ask that. I don't think it's a side story, Tony. I think it is the story with Jason Day. His game is very sharp, but above the shoulders could come into question. He's had a lot going on at home with his family. Yeah. He did disclose that on Wednesday when he walked off the golf course about his mother. He told us yesterday on camera. Again, he's a very honest kid. Tony, you would love being around him as in your writing days and still doing what you do now, because he's always insightful and he's always honest. He comes out to tell you things as opposed to hiding it and making you dig for it.
Yeah.
And I commend him for that. And his mother's doing a lot better. The surgery went well, and he actually told us yesterday that if she's okay and he plays well enough, she might fly here and come for the weekend.
Well, okay, then that is a good circumstance for him. Let me get back to the weather, because Michael instructed me last night, though he is sitting here, he instructed me I have to talk to you about the weather and Lexi Thompson, that these are two very big stories in golf. So let's go to the weather again. The weather is Thursday, but Friday, Saturday, Sunday supposed to be good, or what?
Well, I spoke to Kip Scheman late last night, and Kip told me that
developing
you've got
models.
To dig deep when it comes to the weather here at Augusta. It's going to be really chilly on Thursday morning. It's supposed to be a high of 60. So that means on Thursday morning, you know, before, say, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, you know, it could be in the 40s, which is going to be cold. And also the wind, that's the biggest factor here. The temperature doesn't bother me either way if I'm a player. But players will always tell you, Tony, if it's windy, it's tricky. And here at Augusta, maybe more than anywhere else, with the valleys and the trees as tall as they are, it's very, very tricky to play this golf course when it's windy. It's supposed to be very windy on Thursday, a little less wind, a little warmer on Friday. Saturday and Sunday are going to be magical. Not a cloud in the sky, they say right now. It's only Tuesday, but they say right now, not a cloud in the sky. Low 70s should be perfect on Saturday and Sunday. But those first 2 days before the cut's made could be really, really tricky.
I have to tell you, Steve, it sounds counterintuitive what you said about Rory McIlroy. If you grow up in wind and weather all the time and you're the greatest amateur, you know, before you turn pro, it's odd to hear you say he doesn't play well in wind, because I would feel that's all he had to work with when he was a kid.
I'm with you, but here's my theory on that. And he's kind of backed me up on it. He kind of laughs at me when I say it, but he's the first great young European player who grew up in the Tiger era. Most of the great European players are kind of Tiger's age. You know, Lee Westwood, Darren Clark, Justin Rose, Paul Casey, those kinds of guys. He's the first great young one, and he patterned his game as an American as opposed to a European. So when he traveled around the world playing junior golf, he hit that high draw. Well, they don't do that over in Europe. They play it on the ground. They play it below the tree level so they can get it through the piercing wind and the cold temperatures. He plays that high towering ball, and I think he's more Americanized as far as his game than any other great young European player. That's my theory. He says, and I said, come on, man. I mean, you're a Tiger guy. You know, he's 28 years old, and he kind of agrees, but he says he can play in anything. But his record shows, look, at Congressional in our backyard, after he didn't win the Masters in 2011, every major he's won, wet conditions and no wind. Wow. That's his record in major championships.
That'll help me when I bet later on today. You mentioned Tiger, Rory being a Tiger guy. Tiger won't play. At what point... And you get asked this, I'm sure, a lot, and you have to ask other golfers, at what point is it over? At what point do we even stop asking because it's over and everybody knows it?
At what point is it over? At what point do we hope it's over? I mean, geez, enough already, Tony. Seriously, I it's almost unbecoming of someone of his stature to do this to himself and to the sport, the golf world. There's so much drama involved. I mean, he announced it, you know, back in the old days. Tony, you and I are old. Back in the old days, you announced things on the late Friday dump because there was no news cycle at 7:30 p.m. on a Friday night. He announced it Friday night at 7:30. In this day and age with social media and computers and all the things going on, it doesn't matter when you announce something. It's going to make huge news. And he did it late Friday night. I didn't like that. I thought that was kind of weak. But I understand he can't play. I totally am cool with that. But at what point is the drama too much even for him to take? And I just think he's such a great champion, was so great for the game, that at some point you've got to just say enough's enough. Now, as you look forward, Tony, he's not playing the Players. He hates the golf course, and it's really hard. The next event he usually plays would be the Memorial. Man, that'd be a brutally hard place to come back and play after 3 or 4 months away from the game. The U.S. Open at Erin Hills, he's qualified to play in there. He's eligible to play in it, but Erin Hills would kick his butt. I mean, I just don't see when he comes out to play after this prolonged period of absence.
Such a funny consequence where you think to yourself, you knock on the door, Mrs. Woods, can Tiger come out and play? You know,
right,
no,
exactly.
Not today.
So bizarre.
Not this year. All right, Lexi Thompson, what are we doing here? What are we doing with the golf police 24 hours after the fact? Doesn't there have to be at some point, you know, the end of the window on that?
I don't want to take Nigel's job, but can we queue up Brian Arakpo, please?
You know,
I mean, honestly, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, and the other guy. I mean, honestly, what the heck is going on out there? You know, there's a couple things. I was surprised over the last – we got to Augusta on Friday, seen a lot of guys the last 4 days. And then on Sunday when that happened, talked to a bunch of them yesterday. And I asked them about what took place. And they were 50-50, Tony. I thought they would be more on one side than the other. And here's the dilemma with golf. You want to play to the tradition of the game. There we go.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
we go.
Yeah.
All right. What about the other guy?
You're asking Nigel to do a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I need to take a nap after that. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's they want to have the tradition of the game, and they want to be able to police themselves and all of that. And I totally get that. But from an optics, it's just bad optics when a viewer is emailing in almost 24 hours later after the round has been started the next day. I realize the tournament isn't over, but the next day had already begun, and it just looked bad for the sport. I think it just is a bad practice when viewers email or call in. By the way, I work for NBC and Golf Channel. Where do they find these numbers and emails? I don't even have them. I mean, seriously, if I saw a rules infraction, I wouldn't know who to tell. I mean, it's just the most bizarre thing. But I think most players think this, that they got the rules infraction part correct. There was a rules infraction. There's no debate on that. Michael will tell you that. Every golfer will tell you that. The coin was placed, and then the ball was replaced in a different spot. There's no question about that. But a viewer calling in, the next round already beginning, a four-shot penalty as opposed to a two-shot penalty.
Four-shot.
I mean, it was all bad.
Yeah.
It really was.
All right, I will not let you get out of here without asking about Patrick Ewing in Georgetown, which is, at least locally, such a big deal. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm curious if Patrick is going to go the Big John route and not let anybody speak to his players until the Big East tournament. I think that'll be fascinating to see his dynamic with the media and the fans. I mean, to me, I'm not a Georgetown guy. I mean, I love listening to Saliza. He's a big-time, you know, CNN guy now, and I understand that. And listening to all the Hoya people. I'm a Terp. So listening to all the Hoya people cry about their record the last few years kind of makes me laugh. I think that if they were going to go in a different direction, it would have been better, because now it still seems like Big John's in charge of the program and kind of okayed his son being released from his contract, and then hiring Patrick just seems like it's same old, same old. I think they're going to go the same route as Mullen at St. John's, and they're going to be a non-factor. And hopefully one day the incomparable Robert Berg and the great Joe Arrow are going to be singing songs about Georgetown being bad in basketball again. If you're a Hoyas fan, great. If you're a Terps fan, I think it's a great hire. I think I don't think there's any way that they're going to be successful in that type of regime.
We will see.
Honestly, what the f*** are we doing here?
All right, Steve.
Tony,
have a wonderful time.
Can you get the Caps past the second round?
I don't know. Yeah, past the second round.
Yes.
First round.
Yeah, like I would worry
first round first,
yes,
right?
I think, as we used to say to Tracy McGrady, who said he was in the third round when he didn't actually get into the third round. Let's take them one round at a time.
And
thank
Blake,
you, Steve.
One last thought. Blake Treinen, 1-for-1 in saves. He's our guy.
One for one, and I think I think
he's our guy.
Fortunate that Daniel Murphy hit it, got it to 4-2 mm-hmm. and not necessarily 3-2. Maybe breathing a little easier at 4-2. All right, enjoy yourself.
They're not about to play Enter the Sandman.
No, they're not.
Blake Trinan.
I'll see you.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Steve Sands, boys and girls, always a pleasure to have him on the show. We will come back in the Old Guy Radio segment. We're going to have Hank Azaria because his show debuts. Is it tonight?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow. His show debuts. Brockmeyer debuts tomorrow. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read. Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. It's important to know where your food comes from. I like Blue Apron. I keep telling you I'm going to do it, but I'm going away for a while. I'm going to take some vacation. When I get back, when I'm settled in again, I think I will go back to Blue Apron because I miss shallots, because everything comes with shallots. It makes me very, very happy. The shallots are so beautiful. If you don't actually use them, you can just, you know, put a little hole through them and wear them around your neck to ward off vampires. It's affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. There's a variety of new recipes each week, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within the entire year. You'll never get bored. You can customize your recipes each week based on your preference. There's flexibility. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose what fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. It's easy to do. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. You have to be diligent. You have to follow it. But there's never comes a point where you say, well, what do I do now? It is very explicitly written for you, and it's guaranteed. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they will make it right. You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TonyK. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That is Blue Apron, BLUEAPRON, blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day. 53 years ago today, this was the number one record. The Beatles had 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. David, you've heard of the Beatles, haven't you?
Yes.
They're very good. They were very good. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
And 14 in the top 100.
Yeah.
They were all right.
Yeah.
It's a good day for them.
Everything they released was really good.
And by the way,
Michelle.
Yes.
That stunk.
And Revolution Number 9.
Just, well, it was odd.
Yes, it was very
odd.
Strange.
You can find something in it. You can't find anything in the
show. may have been under some sort of influence.
Right. But the story about this song is that when Paul wrote this, they were in Paris and they were going to record it. And then George Martin took a look at it and he said, no, you got to take the chorus and you've got to put that first. So basically, George Martin rearranged the song and there's your number one hit right there.
And that's why he became Sir George Martin.
Right.
Because he knew what he was doing.
God changing the
Hank Azaria joins us now. He was on last month. He was great. His show, Brockmeyer, that drops tomorrow, right? That's the network debut that everybody can see is tomorrow, Hank?
That's right, Tony. I'm glad to hear you talking Beatles.
Yeah, when you can do voices, it's wonderful, isn't it? Let me get, I got a bunch of things to ask, and one totally out of left field, which you will love, I'm sure. The idea for the show, was this your idea for the show? Are you part of the creative process in the show, and do you write any part of the show?
I'm going to answer as Jim Brockmeyer, if I might, Tony. That's integral. Integral is the word I would use for the creation of the show.
Yeah.
I wrote the short with a few buddies of mine. The original idea of a guy like that, does a man who talks like this on the air always sound like this? What if he melted down on the air and still sounded like this? The short was my idea. And then, yeah, we developed it to a certain point and then handed it off to Joel Church Cooper, who's an amazing writer, I had that very lucky thing happen in show business, Tony, where you find a writer on the rise, you know, before they've made their fortune and are known for a million wonderful things. We caught this guy right at the right moment. And he really, I would have been happy with a very sophomoric, smart, well-observed, something that was the tone of the short. It was about as far as I could take it. He brought this whole level of depth and alcoholism and narcissism and darkness to it that I never could have really mined as a writer.
Here's what I'm thinking, though. We've all grown up and we've watched sports movies in which the people cast as sports heroes are terrible. They don't know how to play. It looks terribly awkward. If you're my age, you remember, you know, Tony Perkins as Jimmy Pearsall. I mean, just it was unbelievably bad. Yeah. And you see football movies where you go, this is garbage. But in this particular case, though you're not playing, you couldn't do this if you weren't a baseball fan. I've got to believe you must be a huge baseball fan to even to get it and want to do it.
Tony, that's totally true. I love baseball dearly. It's a big part of my life. It's really Mets first, then baseball.
Okay.
I consider myself a Mets fan first and then a baseball fan. But again, same with the writer. I keep shouting out the writer. He's, by the way, 53 years ago, not today, but I was born. Probably that song was number one when I was born. But because my birthday's coming up. But Joel's about 38, the guy who wrote this, and he's another deep love and understanding of baseball, and that is absolutely part of it. In fact, we're so inside baseball. The guy who directed it and also is very much a part of the creation of it, he directed all of them, is a British guy named Tim Kirkby, who we introduced him to baseball. And at first we thought maybe that's a liability, but then we realized that Joel and I are so inside it that it's good to have somebody who's more objective, who's like, I don't understand what's happening now. Like, oh, you don't get this baseball? It was good to know that not all our audience is going to be huge baseball fans.
Okay, so if you're a Mets fan, what's the deal with Syndergaard's blister and how tragic could this be? Because I don't even know that Harvey's going to go the whole year, and this is and Mats is already out. This is the strength of the team, is the pitching.
Yeah, well, I mean, blister, right, doesn't sound too serious.
Right.
Well, they're already talking about him missing his next start, which is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But this is something that I guess bothered him in the Blue Jays organization when he was coming up a bit. I got to believe he's going to work through that. But, you know, believe me, the New York media is absolutely freaking out about it.
You're not nearly as old as I am, and you will not remember this because it happened when you were just very, very young. When Nolan Ryan came up with the Mets, Nolan Ryan had blisters all the time on his fingers of his right hand. And people used to send in homemade remedies like pickle juices. And there'd be pictures on the back page of the Daily News of Nolan Ryan with his right hand in a jar of brine. And then the next day he'd go three innings and his hand would blow up. And he never became for the Mets, even though they had 1969, like the greatest season of my life to watch a baseball team. He's on the team, but he ain't Seaver and he ain't Kuzman. Mm-hmm. He was never great as a Met. He was great after he left. But that whole thing, the whole thing about blisters, the thing with pitchers, it's a hangnail, which Max Scherzer, his knuckle hurts. What are you talking about? And he missed all the spring training. So as you know, Hank, with pitchers, it's always this sort of very esoteric stuff that takes them out of the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the remedies because they were talking yesterday. I guess the modern equivalent is somebody saying, well, now Syndergaard's Twitter feed's going to blow up with people's homemade blister remedy suggestions, which probably happened.
Yeah.
By the way, of course Nolan Ryan was great as soon as the second he became not a Met.
That's right.
Of course.
Went to the Angels, had 53 no-hitters.
Brockmeyer, I think Brockmeyer would probably recommend for Syndergaard, forget about pickle brine. What you need... You need the sweat of a Filipino hooker. Put your hand in there. Trust me, that'll work.
I got to believe you're going to be given, if you haven't already been given, the opportunity to call games. Would you do that? Would you do like Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN? Would you do it?
We are actively working on that. Like one of the joys of this project for me, you're right, I do love baseball. I sent it to you personally. I sent it out to all sports guys that I love and admire, like Bob Costas. And, you know, we had some guys in it, like Joe Buck, who, by the way, is genius actor in it. He appears in episode 7 and 8. But
And I don't want to spoil anything, but I've seen the teaser on that. And Bruckmeyer is not a fan of Joe Buck, is he?
No, Jack, listen, it's nothing personal. Black man just happens to hate his stupid face.
So
which he tells Joe Buck to his face.
Yeah. So you have the chance?
There was some point I was making, but I forgot.
To call a game.
Oh, which I'm at the point we've been actively lobbying to do it. We're getting close. I think I could only do it for the Mets because, as I said, I have intimate. I know enough about the Mets to sit there and actually call it. I don't know enough about most other teams to do that, but we are working on it.
Well, if you come down to Washington and you call the Mets and the Nats, I'll sit in with you because I know the Nats and I knew the Mets as a kid. I mean,
yes, I'm sure you did growing up on Long Island.
Yeah.
And boy, do I hate the Nats. My goodness, do I hate them. So let's
good.
Get in there and let's mix it up.
Yeah. All right. So here's what happens. So when we do the PTI show, because the Eric Rideholm Empire is Around the Horn and the Dan Le Batard show and the PTI show, mm-hmm. we are watching the feed of the Dan Le Batard show in the newsroom as we're getting ready for the PTI show. And mm-hmm. I don't know if this has aired or anything, but I saw you on with Le Batard, and you were great. And my first reaction was, he went on Le Batard. He likes PTI. When does he work? He must have so much time on his hands because you're watching Poppy. I mean, it was just weird to me. How much time off do you have?
Tony, my day job is The Simpsons.
Right.
I'm astronomically, extraordinarily overpaid to basically work 2 to 3 hours a week. And it enables me to not have to take most dumb jobs I don't want to do, which are most of them.
Right, right.
So you're exactly right. I can be with my family. I wait for my son to get home from school. I record PTI and Highly Questionable and a few other shows that I really enjoy, especially some local, like, you know, Daily News Live. I try to keep up with the Mets, Jets, and Knicks. And that's how I relax. And I will either watch them in real time or at the end of the day. I'm a genuine fan. I love this stuff.
So you spend a lot of time at home, supermarket shopping, hanging around the house, hanging around the neighborhood, right?
Well, I have a people supermarket shop for me.
Oh, okay.
Let's not get crazy.
See, I love to go to supermarkets.
I
love to take the cart. I love to go up and down all the aisles, even though I buy nothing in most of the aisles. I love to say, oh, look, the paper towels are cheap today. If I buy 10,000 paper towels here, it's very cheap. I'll look at the price of chicken, the price of eggs, the cottage cheese. I enjoy that enormously. I do.
Listen, I'm a fellow tribesman, so as a Jew, I say it is tremendously comforting for a Jewish person. Because not only are you surrounded by tons of food, but as you just said, you can price shop. You can really get into the prices.
Fantastic.
So it's a win-win for
Jews. Oh, I love it. I love it. Just love it. Okay. So we have to go to the party, the premiere, the red carpet, when Nigel went up and was very excited to go up and had only one moment of doubt and pain. And that was he wanted very much to meet Amanda Peet, right?
Yeah.
Well, and was not successful in meeting Amanda Peet.
Well, it's more my timid nature because she was surrounded by friends. And I'm like, well, the last thing I want to do is go and be like, hi, you're really cute. You know, like, get out of my face, mate. So,
well, that's pretty much what I did, Nigel. Hi, you're really cute. That was about as much game as I had. I'm having a very Hebraic theme to the conversation. But a night like that really did remind me of my bar mitzvah.
Really?
You're hosting everybody.
Yeah.
And I know them well enough, so you only get to spend 30 seconds with about everybody. And so I saw Nigel for about 30 seconds. If I had a little more time, you could have said, do you mind if I say hi to Amanda Peet? I would have been happy to.
Well, yeah, I did want to.
Next time.
Those red carpet things, having been on them occasionally, because when ESPN does a production, say at the Super Bowl, they say that all the ESPN mm-hmm. people have to walk the red carpet, and you walk it, and somebody's paid to take your picture, and a couple of people look at you. But when a star comes in,
sure.
I mean, when you can tell. Right, Hank. You can tell who the stars are in that whole red carpet deal at Emmys and Oscars. It's a really different deal, I think.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I mean, I'm just wondering your experience on red carpets.
Oh, I've had I've been on every end of that, but it's especially, you know, like so you do the thing and you're standing there, the red carpet, and they're photographing you, and then all of a sudden, all the cameras, and maybe there's 50 of them, swing quickly to the right,
yeah,
just to pick up somebody else that they'd much rather get a photograph of than you.
And you turn around too, and you go, oh, well, that explains it.
Yeah. Totally. Like, yeah. Yes, can I have a? You pull out your own phone. And
yeah. Why wouldn't you do that? All right. So Brockmire debuts tomorrow night, April 5th on IFC. Am I correct? What time?
IFC, they assure me it's an actual channel, Tony Kornheiser. Yeah. I have researched this. I think it's 3009.4 right. or something.
Okay.
10 o'clock on IFC. First two episodes, actually. And episode one and two. I really, really love the show. I think it's my favorite thing I've ever done. I've heard you on your podcast talk about, I know you love to talk about entertainment. I honestly can't wait for you to see these shows, Tony.
I am happy really to will. Do so. I'm going to record them, of course, because I'm never up at that hour.
No, you're
but right. I'm going to record them, and I'm going to watch them, and it's going to make me very happy. Thanks for being on. I wish you all the best in getting to announce a game. I think that would just be such a kick. Be so much fun for you to do.
I would be actually a dream come true, as a lot of this project has been for me. So I'll make it happen. You'll see. I'll make it happen, or I'll get insanely drunk and just crash my way in there and just do it anyway.
Fabulous. Thank
one
you,
way
Hank.
Or the other, it's going to happen.
Thank you, Hank.
Thank you.
Okay. Hank Azaria, boys and girls, who's, I mean, honestly, I see him. He's talking to Levitard. Mm-hmm. He's watching Levitard all the time. I know he's watching reality all the time. And as you say, or as he says, well, I work 2 hours a day. You know, it's a pretty good deal.
I have another idea for a spinoff from this show.
What?
So, you know, you have carpool karaoke and you got Seinfeld in the car with other comedians, right?
I see
you
where this is
go
going.
Shopping.
I like
go
shopping.
Up and down the aisles of a supermarket with someone.
I like shopping.
Sure.
Think of the conversations you
I go to the
way.
Same soup aisle all the time. Mm-hmm. I just, and I look, oh, look, it's tortilla soup. Maybe I should get that. Just one can. We will take a break. When we come back, we have emails and jingles. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's Tony Kornheiser, and I found the best way for you to buy travel. It's Upside.com. Here's why everyone who hears about this thing loves it. At Upside, you save money on travel, and you get a free Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time. So you get savings and a big gift card, and you get the gift card for free. And here's how they do it. Upside bundles your flights and hotel together for one low price. Bundling saves a ton of money, especially on business travel. So they give you an Amazon gift card. Your company saves money, and you still keep all your miles. And right now, when you use my name, Tony, which is my name, you're guaranteed a free $200 Amazon gift card your first time. My name, Tony, gets you a guaranteed $200 Amazon gift card. How can you not do that? Upside, you save big on travel. You get a big gift card every time. It's upside.com, U-P-S-I-D-E. That's upside.com. Minimum purchase applies. See site for details.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Hello. Michael, it's me, Dad. I saw a license plate. But I forgot what it said, cause I'm feeling really rather sad.
I lost a glove. I really like those gloves. I guess I'll have to buy another pair. But on sale. Hey, is it raining? It is raining here. I took the dog for a walk and it wasn't raining when we left. So we went. She barked at the squirrels and we both got rather wet.
The lyrics, sir, Robert Skolnicki. The voice, of course, is Joe Arrow. There's another verse down the road on that. It's just wonderful.
I'm just going to start posting the voicemails straight to the online.
Absolutely. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Michael Wilbon, to Hank Azaria, to Steve Sands. I want to thank our sponsors, Blue Apron, Casper Mattresses, Upside.com. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We have, listen to this. This is from Blake DeBonis, Blake DeDonis, rather, in Starkville, Mississippi, the home of Mississippi State. I've written the show about this before, but my fiance, Carly Tybalt, is an assistant coach in the Mississippi State women's basketball team. Her father is Mike Tybalt,
sure,
the head coach and GM of the Washington Mystics. We were all in Dallas for the Final Four and witnessed the historic UConn defeat in person. It was undoubtedly the greatest sporting event I've ever attended in my life. 2 days later, the sting of being unable to finish off the championship was crushing, but the chance to even be there was special. When we arrived back to the hotel after the loss, thousands of Mississippi State fans greeted us at the hotel, ringing their cowbells and cheering like we had won. Listening to your pod now from today, I'm smiling to know that I witnessed history and know that in a few weeks, this week will be looked back on fondly. We broke the mighty UConn streak. Right. No one will ever forget that.
That's right. That's this true. Is the one case where I think it's okay that you didn't win the championship. Yeah. You beat UConn.
Yeah. Would have been nice to beat Finland to get that gold.
Right, right,
but,
right.
Well, that's the great analogy from the hockey team.
Yes.
Right.
But even if they didn't beat Finland,
it's still
they'd
magnificent.
Still beat the Russians.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody remembers Finland. Right. Okay.
Finland does.
Tim Wheeler. Well, yeah. Tim Wheeler.
Pavel Nurmi does.
Writing from a farm in Illinois. Imagine my surprise as a longtime emailer to the show to hear the name of the town that I call home mentioned in today's podcast. See, Oakland, Illinois has less than 1,000 residents. So when you played music sent in by Eric Butler, I thought, hey, I know that guy. I've been a substitute teacher for his kids in our local high school. His daughter is in my son's class. There are less than 30 kids in the entire grade. I considered mentioning to his kids to tell their dad La Cheeserie, but then I thought, what better way to communicate with someone across our tiny little city than to say it across the podcast airwaves? Nah. So to you, Eric Butler, La Cheeserie from your neighbor Tim Wheeler.
Nice.
That is connective tissue.
There you go.
Ira Fussfeld writes, was looking forward to hearing Tony and Michael talk about what happened to Lexi Thompson Sunday. Hope they'll get to it on Tuesday. Well, we got to it with Sands.
Yes, we did.
You know, so, I mean, we satisfied that. There you go. From Dr. John Grantham in Bowie, Maryland, although it was great to hear Jason Lockenfora on the pod, I was disappointed that he didn't do the whole show in Baltimore's.
Well, yeah.
On second thought, it probably would have been really annoying hearing somebody try to fake an accent for an entire show. Thank goodness we don't have to listen to that.
Thank goodness.
That from Mark Corriere in Ellicott City in Maryland, listening to Jason Lockenfora on Monday, did I understand this correctly? The sponsor on his podcast is a nursing home, the Charleston. Talk about skewing old. His next sponsorship will be Depends, and he'll be angling for a good time slot on the OPN. I'd love to be sponsored by a nursing
Money's
home.
Money's money.
Sure. Exactly.
Because I would just hold out for, like, a good room.
Yes.
Ingleside, Rock Creek Park.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nice one.
Is that where you're going to send him, Michael?
I'm not looking into it just yet.
Yeah,
just nice. Yet.
Good public cover right there.
From Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi. While I'm disappointed that Phil's mom couldn't close the deal, in a sense, I'm kind of glad that the white whale is still out there for her. One day, Creighton and Marquette will win it all, and I just hope she's in their corner when it happens.
Yeah.
Trey Dunkerson, Columbia, Missouri. Can someone teach Chris Saliza how to tie a tie? I saw him on CNN this morning. Looked like my 3-year-old had tried to do it. The criticism that Saliza gets is surpassed only by the criticism that Luke gets, right?
You don't want to see the Luke emails.
Only by Luke. Luke stakes out territory out there. I mean, you know, that's what Luke does. From Joe Naz in Raleigh, North Carolina. I submit the following nickname for Saliza to hopefully bring his nickname quest to a merciful end. D.C. First, Saliza's in the D.C. area. Second, while Saliza can always claim D.C. stands for Diesel Saliza, the rest of us will rightfully know it actually stands for Delicate Saliza due to his squeamish nature regarding all medical maladies, as well as his refusal to be confrontational in all matters, including requesting his money be returned for unfulfilled tea orders at Starbucks. Congrats, D.C., you have a nickname. Are we going to talk to the Starbucks people? I mean, don't they want to give Saliza back his money?
I don't know what they want with that phone call.
From Ranley Durrett, a millennial person of the pod from Melville, New York. That's on Long Island. Another reason why you shouldn't leave your grid. Diesel Saliza breaking out his golden pipes made me fast forward the pod Tuesday. I hope you don't let the inmates run the asylum again anytime soon. We love Saliza.
Absolutely.
Stop it. Okay, let me get to this. We're going to take a break now. Not just now. We're going to go on spring break for a few days. So there'll be no podcast for the rest of the week, but we come back next week. Everything will be fine and dandy. So
next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. So everything is fine and dandy, and we're going to take a slight vacation, right?
Yes.
You know, and maybe hit the little white ball around. if you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Jesus, am I speaking Chinese?
get your dancing shoes. It's time to let the music play. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. Find your favorite hat, girl. We're gonna dance the night away. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. The music's loud and the drinks are flowing. Plenty of friends now to keep us going. Put the sawdust on the floor. We're gonna fed the door. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. Find your dancing shoes. It's time to let the music play. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. Get your wig hat on, girl. We're gonna dance the night away. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. And show you how. Pass a good time and pass some good wine. You'll never wanna leave. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. Forget about those shoes, girl. You're gonna kick them off anyway. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette. You don't need to have that hat, girl. It's time to let the music play. Le Bata Roulette. Lizzie, Le Bata Roulette.
It's a new wave of ecstasy, seeing things that you shouldn't see when they're right there under your skin. Think back, things I've tried. Think again, it's not too wise. With swollen ankles, black and blue, my wheels hit rocks that stop me true. And to think my name's tattooed on your thigh. Gotta try it, prove to me. I gotta try it, let you see. kinda groovy. You twist my brain, you pull my arm. Blew me away with that backseat kiss. You know, no, we did the night no harm. I still recall the look in your eye when you said farewell to the sun. Moonlight blocked by the midnight storm. You know your patience come undone. Me well, torture me.